The Greg Papa Report is brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Pop, we were having a discussion this morning. Right now, Steph's stat line, 50% from the floor, 50% from deep, 93% from the stripe. Do you think it's possible? All right. I'm certainly not, he's not the favorite to do it, but do you think he could complete the season knocking down 50% or greater from deep?
Yeah, we talked about it when he got off to the great start. I can't remember who was on our show. It wasn't Brandon Payne because he wouldn't be so boastful. It was a member of the media that brought up that he would, maybe it was Mark Spears. I can't remember. It's not important, but we talked about this when the Warriors got off to the 10-1 start and Steph was playing so well because the numbers in the NBA, and it goes back to Larry Bird and others, 50, 40, 90, to shoot 50 on all of your floor shots, not just twos, but all of them, including threes, 40 from the three-point line, and then 90 from the free throw line. And then we thought about the concept of Steph going 50, 50, 95, or whatever it was. And he shoots such a high percentage on twos that if he got even his 50, say he shot 50% on threes, how high could he get the overall field goal percentage up? It wouldn't get to 60. But I don't think it's likely. I think right now he's in a really good role because he played two poor defensive teams, young teams that are trying to find his way. And Steph just got a lot of really open looks. He made 11 total baskets last night, and 9 were beyond the line, and the rest were at the free throw line. So that's the ultimate Daryl Morey wet dream. All threes and frees. So he's playing exceedingly well, and I did hear his name dropped again this morning in the conversation about league MVP. But to continue and shoot, make more than half of your threes or half of your attempted threes, I think that's unlikely. But if he could get up into the 45 percentile, that would be amazing.
That's about where he is for his career. So I believe three times he's been over 45%. Steve Kerr only shot 170 threes when he shot 52%. So it would be hard-pressed for Curry as many times as he shoots to approach that. Can we not yet judge Steph's comeback from injury yet because of the two weak opponents they've played? Is tomorrow the real test for how Steph's doing on his way back?
No, he's back. I mean, you look at his skill and you look at his movement, you look at his wind and the amount of minutes he's able to play.
Absolutely.
He played 37 the first game out, and he played 33-47 last night. He's back. I was a little concerned when I saw him Monday in Atlanta warming up with a wrap on his left wrist, which I've never seen him play with before. And I texted Raymond Ritter, what's the deal with that? Why does he have that on? And he checked with him, and he said it was stability. He just wanted more stability there. But when he was asked about it after the game, he did acknowledge something happened there. He didn't want to be more specific. I don't know if he fell or anything. But no, he's back. Now, that does not mean he will not play, his stat line won't be as good. You can't judge athletes by their production necessarily night to night to gauge where some nights they just don't play well. Some nights the other team has a great plan on how to deal with them. And the Milwaukee Bucks are one of those teams. They're going to put extreme length on him. And he has a hard time dealing with Eric Bledsoe on the other end. One way to slow Steph down offensively is to wear him out defensively. We'll see if they cross-match a little bit. Clay, I think, will be on Bledsoe. But Bledsoe ate Steph alive when they met almost 4 weeks ago when he hurt the groin. So, no, he's back. Now, if he goes out and, goes 0 for 20 tomorrow night, that doesn't mean he's hurt. It just means that Milwaukee had a good plan and didn't play well.
Bob, how do you, we're talking about different teams. When you hear Drew Brees, they say Drew Brees in the Saints. It's Tom Brady, New England Patriots. It's LeBron and the Lakers. Is it with this team, is it Steph Curry in the Dubs, or is it KD and Steph? How do you put those titles? Because I'm asking that to say, if it's KD or if it's Kawhi to the Lakers, is it still LeBron?
Well, to say it's LeBron and the Lakers, he just got there. I mean, his whole career was in Cleveland and Miami, so he's reinventing himself as a Laker. I understand what you're saying. I think the beauty of the Warriors, and it's the very reason why Durant came here, was it wasn't Steph's team. And I think that was the finishing argument to get him to come here. from everything you read. You know, I think he wanted to be a Warrior all along, Durant. He just was envious and just wondered about how do you guys play so free and easy and so carefree and fun. And he was so burdened all those years in Oklahoma that he wanted that. But ultimately what sold him on it was the line, apparently, and I never asked Steph this directly, but I've read it, that Steph just said, you know, if you come here, this is not my team. It's not Draymond's team. It's not Clay's team. It's our team. And that's the way they play. They are a read and react type of team. If you want to take somebody away, somebody else is going to beat you. It's like the New Orleans Saints. You know Drew Brees better than anybody. Lowe, he doesn't stick a snap thinking the ball's got to go there if they rotate pro snap. He gets the ball to the open guy. The most open guy shoots. And if he misses, fine. You know, move on. Kevon Looney had a couple of wide open shots last night. He knocked him down. So I don't look at it that way, but it's James's ego. And I heard you guys talking earlier before I got on. What's difficult about James is, and I think he has shored up some obvious flaws in his game. He could not shoot for most of his career. He's gotten to be a better shooter. He still is not a very strong defender. But the biggest issue he has is immense the power of his personality. I'm not going to make it out to be a bad thing because he is a great player and he does command a locker room similar to the, one of the greatest Warrior stars of all time, Rick Barry.
Right.
A lot of guys didn't want to play with Rick. And LeBron is one of those guys. And I heard you guys talking about, you know, Kawhi coming here. And
He's 34, Coach. I mean, the thing about Pop, he's 34. So if Kawhi goes there, do you think LeBron is going to realize, hey, my time is limited? Is this Kawhi? Will Kawhi get all the blame?
Well, do you want to win?
Yes.
Do you want to win or do you not want to win?
It's
the bottom line. If you're looking for who gets the headlines when you win, you're not going to win. So that's what I'm talking about. The Warriors don't sweat the small stuff here. That's where the ego gets into play. The one thing, and I did not like, you know, everything Durant said. You know, I don't know if they opened up a bottle of wine or he Durant's talking a little too much for my taste right now. He needs to back away because a lot of this talk, like right now, they're debating, what's this Stephen A. Hole show, First Take? Is Kevin Durant a top five NBA player? What? Is he a top five? He's the best player in the world. But because of all the chatter with him, he's never going to get, I don't know why. And I did like what he said about fawning over LeBron, because I've been saying that for years, that the media just fawns over him. And it's mainly ESPN. And they just in love with LeBron James. They have when Dick Vitale did his high school game and the Chosen One, and they've just fawned over the guy forever. Now, he took it a step further and talked about the fanboys of the media.
Right.
He crushed the whole thing, which was probably excessive. But the point he's making is Paul George did not want to be a Laker. Kawhi Leonard would not, I don't think he would survive in that the media crush of LBJ. Plus, as Durant detailed, Kawhi Leonard has become a very heavy isolation-based player. He needs to hold the ball, massage the ball, rock into a move. It takes him a long time. I mean, he's ticking the clock down. He's become a really good offensive player. Way too much ball holding for my taste, but at the end, if he puts it in the basket, it's fine. But his game would not flourish playing with LeBron James. So what LeBron needs right now, rather than recruiting the next super-duper star to come play with him, whether it's Butler or Kawhi or whomever, Durant, is the young players on the roster have to grow around him. And you can grow. If you watch him and be around him, he is obviously not only a genius and a skill, but everything. He's one step, one beat, or two beats ahead of you on the floor. That's what makes him such a good player.
No question.
I don't understand why Brandon Ingram's game is gone backwards. And Ingram did, you know, tweak his ankle last night. I thought Brandon Ingram would flourish playing with James. So I think what they need to try to do in L.A. is not worry about bringing in the next star to co-star with the obvious, you know, huge star of LeBron. I want to see him make these young players better. And I think Lonzo, outside of the shot, is getting better. Kuzma. But why is Brandon Ingram not growing? If they get those three players to make the kind of jumps they should be making in their second, third, fourth years, they're not going to need anything else to be. They're going to have a hard time beating the Warriors. But there will be a day when the Warriors, if Durant stays, when the Warriors grow old, when these young guys are going to start to take over the NBA. In particular, I think Brandon Ingram and 5 to 7 years, could be the best player in the league.
Pop, we talked about this morning. I wanted to get your thoughts. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred talking about possibly limiting the amount of defensive shifts a team can implement per game, maybe banning it altogether. Where do you land on that? Are you pro or anti-shift?
Well, he brought this up years ago, and I laughed at it. And what would you do? You would make all infielders keep their spikes on the dirt if there's dirt on the field, you know, in the infield. Would you, you know, not allow three to go to one side? I think anytime you legislate against what the out of the box thinking in a sport does, I think that's not your role. I think it's up to the hitting coaches, the offensive people, to come up with a plan. It'd be like, you know, every NFL game would be like the Pro Bowl. You can't blitz. You have a 4-man defensive line. You can't go to exotic personnel. You can't go empty. Well, hell, that's the fun of the game. That's where the offensive minds are ahead of the defense. The defense catches up and vice versa. That's the evolution of sport. So I don't like it. What he's looking at is the numbers are being down. It's becoming the only way to combat the shifting is to hit the ball over the fence. But what Paul Molitor did in Minnesota this year, going to a 4-man outfield, I thought was very interesting. And that's the kind of thing I think the sport needs more than ever. Otherwise, it becomes too static where you've got everybody lined up where you're at. To answer your question, Joe, no, I don't like it. But I think what he's saying is we're having a problem where some of the offensive players in the game are just being marginalized. I think it's really hurt Brandon Belt overall. They're lining up their shift right into his swing. And he's going to have to change his swing path. I don't like it, but it's willing to have to learn more about it. How would you do it? Would you make infielders play on the infield only? Would you only have a 3-man outfield? Would you be against, moving a second baseman over to the left side of the infield against a right-handed hitter? Would that be no longer allowed? I mean, I'd have to have more specifics on what he's talking about. Initially, my thought would be that's not your job. It's the job of the hitting coaches and the hitting people in baseball, the offensive thinkers in baseball, to figure out a way to react to what's going on with the shifts.
And they're instead trying to focus on things like pitch clock and defensive shifts when they should be focusing on other ways to improve offense in baseball, such as having an actual strike zone that's consistent and maybe making it so pitchers can't balk every time they want to throw over to first base. Aren't there other incremental moves that baseball could make to improve offense, Pop?
Yeah, I mean, you make good points there. I think the strike zone is something you could look at. I mean, if you wanted to increase offense in baseball, I think you would go to an automated strike zone, because when you look at the actual rule book definition of a strike zone, it would get them to raise the ball up higher. Now, I know that they are doing that a little bit now to combat the launch angle, where guys are basically swinging uppercut swings, so they're going low to high. So pitchers are trying to combat that by working high in the strike zone with velocity. But if you really change the strike zone and didn't give them so far down below the hollow of the kneecap and raised it, the actual textbook strike zone is the armpits and the letters. How often do you see a ball above the belt being called a strike?
Not a lot of armpit strikes these days.
Not a lot of armpit strikes. It's sweaty there. I mean, go back. I know sometimes I like watching the old games on, the MLB at bat app. Go back and watch Sandy Koufax pitch. He's coming at your neck. Today, those would be balls. You wouldn't get guys to swing at it. But if you raise the strike zone and allowed them to pitch up and not down, you would have more balls in play. Now, they would change their swing path. They wouldn't have to go with the launch angle and low to high. They would be more of a level swing, but they would catch the ball higher, and obviously, higher pitches go out of the ballpark. So that would be one way around it. I agree with you. But then, you get into the umpires union, you'd have to get rid of the umpires and not have, home plate umpires, which would cause a whole other problem for the commissioner.
Catch him noon to 3 p.m. today with Monte Hill. They'll be joined by Brandon Payne, Steph Curry's trainer, at 12:30, and George Karl at 2:30. Greg Papa with us here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you for your time, Pop. We always appreciate it.
Two of my favorites, Brandon Payne and Georgie. We'll have fun today.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you.
Take care, guys.